That's why I always say, you know, I always tell musicians, especially young up and coming musicians, look, if you think you're going to negotiate, you have to be willing to walk away from the deal, period. Just quit. Like, there is no negotiating. The definition of negotiating is having so much money that you literally don't need to be there negotiating.
But I call that you money.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, it is episode 76, another week gone, another week to come, and we have a guitarist for us tonight.
That's right. So a couple months back, how many months now, Nomad?
Like 4 months? Couple, 2, 3, yeah.
5? Yeah, okay. So a few months ago, I met Nomad at Bryce's guitar school. Oh, Bryce, say hello.
Hello.
Bryce! What's up, dude? I had no idea you were sitting there. I wouldn't have said such awful things to your father.
Bryce can't hear anything you're saying.
Oh, I love it. That's perfect.
He heard me laugh and he's laughing. So that's all there is.
But, that's all he needs.
That's all he needs. So a few months ago, I met Nomad at Bryce's guitar school and he was guesting there. He's a, what do you call yourself? A musical director, an MD, right?
Well, yeah, that's a job title, really. I go by, the career musician.
And he is the career musician.
Correct.
Well, with all those guitars on the wall, I mean, he must be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, quite a few.
Gentlemen, before we get into, the show and all this stuff, how about we start with our beers? And, in courtesy, we'll let you go first, Nomad, and then we can get into the show and, like, how you got your name and all that good stuff.
I love it. Thank you so much.
So go for it.
Okay, well, I'm drinking this evening. I am drinking, as you can see here, gentlemen. Sorry, all of our listeners can't see, but this is the North Coast Brewing Company's Old Rasputin. Now, this was a gift from...
That's a fine one.
Yes, it's a fine one. I mean, a fine beer. It's a gift from a dear friend, this guy that I met named Ted. Oh, wait, Ted, that's you. So
that's right. You got it from the green room.
Yeah,
right?
The green room.
I had that in the green room.
Yeah, that's right. The Trailer Junkies Hoppy Pods green room. So I just corked it, if you will. It smells beautiful. You know what I love about this? Because I've had this before, so I don't know if that's cheating or not. Yeah, but
it's not.
I do love the weight. It's very dense. It's very weighty. Does that make sense?
For sure. Yes. That makes total sense. I know what you mean.
So I'm giving it a nice sideways pour. Taking my time. Before I fill up the glass, I'm going to take a little sippy sip just to see.
There you go.
Get it aerated.
Yeah, get it aerated. Concerned. So here we go.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Just like I remember it. Now... It's got a slight bit of chocolatey stout, a slight bit of, what's the bitterness that makes the IPA bitter? What do you call that?
Hops. Hops make it bitter, yeah.
Yeah, it's got a slight hops bitter bite at the end.
Okay, yeah, like on the back end.
On the back end, but when it goes down, it almost tastes like a dark chocolate coffee bar.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, like you're just one of those like little kids. It's like all over your lips, you know?
Man. Yeah, right. You can't contain yourself.
Right, exactly. Ted, what do you have tonight?
So tonight I have, so let me just say that Anne wants to make sure that we give proper props to Guitar Ninjas in Burbank. I was saying Bryce's guitar class, but-
Are you kidding me?
Make sure they get their name in there. So Jason and everybody down at Guitar Ninjas, thank you as always.
Guitar Ninjas?
Yeah, his name is Jason Land, and he founded the company. And don't worry, I was going to give him props anyway because I always do. And he is the one that connected us. So, I love Jason. And what Jason's doing for, I would say the kids, but he also does it for adults too. What he's doing for the aspiring guitar, shredding community is really amazing. I mean, you guys, you're firsthand witness.
And I think one of, so Nomad has a podcast as well. And in the first season of the podcast, Jason's one of his guests. And
that's right.
And they have a great episode. And I listened to that episode and it's part of the reason that we're here tonight doing this.
There you go.
So
all right.
On to the beers. Tonight I was in Whole Foods down in Burbank after work. And then I saw this, this beautiful can in the case, and people are walking by and they're like, they're trying to pick their beers, and Bryce had to go to the bathroom. So I sent him to the bathroom, and then like, I'm chatting up these, this couple trying to buy their beers, and they're like, oh, what do you like? And they're like, lagers and all this stuff. And I'm like, all right, not my cup of tea, but whatever. And Bryce comes out of the bathroom, and I found this can, and I don't know, you guys saw it, right? It's this beautiful...
Oh, yeah, you sent the picture,
this beautiful label, Sally Citra, which is a McKellar out of San Diego. But I loved it so much because it has the label, and then the rest is just that raw polished can. So most of it is can.
Yeah, like no paint.
No paint, no nothing, no finish, just a nice high polish on it, and the sticker. Like it's like afterthought, but the sticker is so well designed. It's, you know, it's this woman with her sunglasses on going to the beach with a huge IPA necklace, flossing like crazy on there.
Did you see my comment on Slack, Ted, when you sent us the photo? Yeah.
Cool and gross. Yeah.
Well, I said, oh, it looks like bathwater brew.
Let's hope I don't get blind drinking.
I was kidding. I was kidding.
All right, here, we'll crack it open.
Yeah, let's tell us. It sounds good. That's a nice crack. So
what's the style of it? Is it an IPA, you said?
Yes, it's an IPA.
Okay.
And it's 7% ABV. I think that Rasputin's like a little bit higher.
I was just going to look it up. You brought up a good point there, a comment. I'm looking at mine. Oh, mine's 9%.
Yeah.
9%.
Ooh. So I got a little bit more of a head, but I'm going to... take care of that.
All right. So for tonight, I have a Stone.
Yeah, it's good.
Espresso Totalitarian.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting.
Have you had that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that one.
Oh, it's incredible. Imperial. Well, I wouldn't. No, I didn't open it yet. But Imperial Russian Stout.
You won the ABV today. This
10.6 ABV.
There you go. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, this one is, it looks like a coffee stout sort of a thing. Well, espresso stout.
Man, that's a nice pour, bro.
Oh, I just go right into it.
Yeah, you just went hardcore straight up instead of the 45 like me and Ted.
That's right. I want that big head. I want that big head.
But especially on a stout, the stout's not, you know, Frank and I had a stout.
They don't foam as much.
Yeah, Frank and I had a stout and it was like, it was almost flat, but it was still perfectly fine. It was.
You know, I agree with that. Why is that, guys?
Well, if you're doing like something on nitro, for example, you have to vigorously pour it because if you don't, you're not going to have any head. And it's probably, I mean, if I had to guess, it's probably just the way the amount of grain just stifles, like the thickness of it essentially just stifles the carbonation, the CO2, you know?
Gotcha.
Because it's just so like creamy, rich, you know? That's just how these kind of beers are. All right, let's take a sip here.
You're making it look. You guys are both making your libations look tasty. Oh.
I'm going to drink this in the morning. I mean, you know, this is going to wake me up for the coffee, right? I don't even need coffee. I'll just drink this thing.
It's Saturday morning. You could stumble through your routine, you know?
Hey, hair of the dog, as they say.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
Have you guys ever really experienced the hair of the dog that bit you? Have you ever really been there before?
Unfortunately, yeah.
Just making sure, because it's
it's not a proud moment in my life.
His name was Popoff.
Popoff.
Popoff. If you got a liter of vodka and it's in single digits, then you've gone the wrong way.
Wow.
Oh man. Yeah, but those are not proud moments. I'll
right.
Have to say
exactly.
That. Let's first start with how Nomad came about to be Nomad.
Okay. That's a great question. So many people ask. So,
How can you not, right?
Yeah, no, I think it's excellent. You know, here's the first thing. When I moved to LA, even before I moved to LA, I came from Nashville, but part of the story. I noticed that a lot of the musicians out here, they had, you know, nicknames. So you'd go to a session, or a lot of times we call a live performance is a gig, right? And, you know, a recording session is something you're going to record on somebody's album or something. And a lot of the old guys back in the day used to call it a date. Yeah, I got this date. You know, especially imagine like these old, yeah, I went on this date. I played my axe, you know, and, you know, I earned 50 bucks. And, you know, you could imagine like 1967, some old musicians talking about like, you know what I mean? So anyway, so you go to lot of these session dates or recordings or gigs, whatever, and everybody's got this alias. And you're like, and you know, one guy's like, yeah, my name is Skillet. What's up? And you're like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Skillet. Am I supposed to call you Skillet for real, or are you joking with me right now? Like, I don't know, you know, or another one might be, you know, DJ Smooth, or, you know, I mean, there's so many, you know. Oh, gosh, there was one that I know, and he'll probably hate me for this, but it was like Biscuit or something like that. It was something really crazy. And I'm just thinking like, okay, I like Biscuits, but I don't think I want to call you Biscuit, but okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that's number one, right? Now let's get to why I chose Nomad. My father is from Cuba, so he migrated here to the States when he was a young man, back in the, you know, 50s, 60s. He was probably, you know, a young teenager, 13 or so, with his grandmother, and his father died early on, and so they made it here, they got here. You know, and you know how they say, oh my gosh, your parents must have came over on a boat. Well, my dad did. He came over to the States on a boat,
yeah.
And then my mom's Italian. So first of all, I'm Cuban-Italian. And I was born and raised in New York for the first 15 years of my life. So I'm kind of like, I'm kind of rough around the edges, you know?
Yeah.
And all the way through to the middle. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, anyway, so then the other thing is my father, by nature, was always an artist. And he was always an entrepreneur. So, which led us to the fact that we had to move around a lot. So dig this, I kid you not, no exaggeration. By the time I was 25, I had over 25 physical addresses that I had lived at.
Wow.
Right.
Wow. You had more placements than you had birthdays.
Exactly. So it's kind of crazy. So that's number one. And then number two, my, of course, number one, my dad being from Cuba, that's nomadic. Number two, the fact that we moved around. And then when I became my own man, so to speak, and I left the house and, you know, went on with my life, I started to move around because I realized, you know, man, you kind of have to go where the music is, you know? And so number three, as modern day musicians, as, you know, doing what we do, we're all kind of nomadic by nature. That's just the way of the business.
Mm-hmm. You got to go where the money is.
Yeah, you follow the muse and the money. Yes, sir. And so Nomad just really had a ring to it. This was probably about 12 years ago that I started using this moniker. Before it became popular, now if you look on Instagram and social media, the term Nomad is very popular, right? It's being thrown around all over. Whether it's for an establishment like a hotel or a restaurant, or whether it's a clothing line or some kind of, you know, apparel or you know, computer tech goods or whatever. So I think it was kind of cool because I was always thinking, as a musician, I was thinking, well, how can I market myself to stand out? Because my name is Michael Rapol, and this would be the fourth point. Michael Rapol. So first of all, if you know a Michael, you typically call him Mike, right? I hate Mike.
Yeah.
I just don't like that name. It's just like, eh, to me, you know?
My little guy is Mikey.
Yeah, okay. So Mike...
I got a four-year-old Mikey.
There you go. So Mikey's cute. You know, I have a couple friends back home that call me Mikey. Used to call me Mikey, whatever. My abuela, you know, my abuelita, she used to call me Maikito, you know? So it's cute. But I always liked Michael. Nobody called me Michael. But then here's the real clencher, guys. Nobody can say my last name. Nobody can pronounce it or spell it. It's really Rapol. It's Rapol. And many people think that it's Italian. Oh, Ripoli, Ripolini, Ripoli. And there's no vowel at the end. There's no I. So I can't tell you countless amount of times that people, instead, there's two L's, R-I-P-O-L-L. So like rest in peace, O-L-L, okay? R-I-P-O-L.
Sure.
So I can't tell you the amount of times, if I had a dime every time somebody misspelled or mispronounced my name, I truly would be a millionaire. So they always add the I, right? Ripley, Rapol, Ripple. And then here's the clincher, guys. In the music business, especially 10, 15, 20 years ago and beyond, and prior to that, we used to have liner notes, right? So you would always see your name written in the liner notes. Do you know how many albums that I've played on where they screwed up the spelling of my name? So that really hurt. Not only did it actually, like, it hurt my feelings a little bit. Like, oh, man, I got my name wrong. That sucks, man. You know, it's not a deal breaker, but it just kind of bums you out. But then when it comes to collecting royalty payments.
That's what I was going to say. The money side comes
Yes.
in.
So it actually.
Then it's important.
Then it does become a problem because as independent contractors, musicians, we never know where the next gig or next check is coming from. And man, we count on those royalties. So please don't screw up our name. So that's the long story. Sorry, sure. That's the long version.
Have you been to Cuba ever, or have you ever been back? Or not back? I guess you weren't born there. But
I have so many friends who have gone, and I'm so jealous, and I can't wait to go. I should have went during the Obama administration because, from what I hear, it was easier. You know, and I'm not trying to get political. I really don't want to get political, but no. I just heard there was less red tape during his administration. But yeah, I really want to go.
Check out Jimmy's pictures. He went.
See?
Yeah, my wife and I went New Year's 2017, 2018. So December 2017 into New Year's, of course, of 2018. Okay. And, you know, supposedly, just like you said, red tape, all the stuff. And you have to fill out this disclosure of the reasons you're going and everything. And, you know, I just put in, you know, as I think photojournalism or something. And then my wife put, you know, support of the Cuban people. And all they did was, we're like, oh man, are they going to buy our story? You know, and we get on the plane and they just grabbed the paper and threw it in a pile and just said, enjoy your trip. I mean, they didn't even care.
Really?
You know, so I don't really think it's that big of an issue. And the Cuban, and the Cuban people were just so friendly. Right. And so, I mean, the whole country is falling down. You see what a failed economic system does. But aside from that, though, I mean, the food was incredible. The people were super friendly. I mean, it was an awesome, awesome trip, you know, and we were there for
And the music.
The music was great.
The food and the music. Come on. That's why you go, you know, the food and the music.
That was incredible. It was incredible. So
that's
let
awesome.
Me just pass a quick story I don't think I've ever told on the podcast anything. So we're sitting in this bar and we're listening to some Cubana music and everything. And we hear people next to us talking with an American accent. And of course we are. And so they said, like, you know, we start chatting each other up. It's like, oh, where are you guys from? You know? And they're like, oh, California. And, oh, we are too. We're at... And we said, oh, you never heard of it. Because, you know, I would live in Lompoc, which is up north of Santa Barbara. And I said, I'm like, oh, you never heard of it. And they said, well, you know, we might have. So I tell them Lompoc, California. And they're like, oh, we're from Santa Margarita. It's like 30 minutes from here.
Wow.
And we're both sitting at the same bar, tables next to each other in Cuba, in Havana. I mean, it was fantastic.
What are the odds,
you know,
right?
So funny. Yeah, you know? I mean, just... 30 minutes down the 101.
Now, that's incredible. How is the transit from here to Cuba? Did you go direct from LA or what did you do?
Well, yeah, at the time we did, imagine this, you're going to Cuba from LA taking Alaskan Air, you know, but we flew Alaskan Air nonstop. I think it was like a 3.5 hour flight. I mean, flight was super easy. And we land in Cuba. I would say more than 50% of the plane were Cubans, not returning, but like yourself, you know, parents
visiting.
Came to the States and they were like ancestors of Cubans from the Castro era, whatever it may have been.
Right.
And we landed. I mean, 2/3 the plane erupts in applause, you know, that they were there and everything. I mean, it was like I had no connection at all. You know, and it was emotional. It was really cool, you know, that these people were so happy to like be landing in their home country essentially after like who knows how long, you know, 50 years or more, you know. It was really cool. It was really cool.
Well, you know, as we're talking about it, I'm sitting here looking on Google at flights from LA to Cuba. I'm like, why not? This is an opportune time, but man, that's so awesome.
But, you know, not to make this a travel podcast.
No, sorry. Yeah, we could change.
No, I think it's really cool, though, that, you know, like, we were, you know, my wife and I visited, you know, Havana just a little while ago, and you're, like, ancestries from there. And I mean, I think that's really
awesome.
Yeah,
it is cool. Look, I'm very grateful for it. And let me tell you, you know, when they say it's in the blood, that's a true statement. It really is, because...
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I create so much Latin music and it just comes so naturally. It's like, and I have such a passion for it, you know? And when people hear the music that I make with the, you know, with the Latin, within the Latin genre, they're all like, oh my gosh, this is totally authentic. You know, it's part of the niche that I have developed for myself as a musician, because...
So you're like a classical guitarist then?
I was classically trained, and also I'm a student of flamenco. I'll always be a student of flamenco from Spain and, you know, the gypsies, and I'm like a baby flamenco student. But yeah, I study classical and Latin music, all the different types, and I play all the different instruments, you know, like a Puerto Rican cuatro. It's a five double set string guitar. I play the eight string ukulele, the Cuban tres, which is like, it's three sets, so it's actually six strings, but it's just three sets of duple strings, you know. I play all these different world instruments, and a lot of them from the Latin culture. So, yeah, it's definitely a passion.
What's that can guitar you have?
Oh, it's just an old gas can or oil can that somebody turned into a guitar. It's really cool.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
How many guitars do you have?
Somewhere between the 60 to 70 mark.
Wow.
Oh, nice. But you don't play anything with a bow, though, do you? Like violin type stuff?
It's funny. I was looking over there because I have a bow sitting over there. I use the bow on guitars sometimes, but no, I don't play the orchestral stringed instruments. That's something I never got into, although I wish I did, but I do not play those. I always like to say I play any stringed / fretted instrument you can throw at me, I will play it.
So are you familiar with the nickel harpa?
I am not, but I love it. Sounds cool. I want one. You got one, Jim?
No, I don't. But I first learned of the nickel harpa when we were, and hopefully I'm pronouncing it correctly, but we were in Estonia.
Oh, see?
And it's a keyed fiddle. So it's like a guitar with keys on it instead of frets.
This thing looks crazy.
And so essentially it's literally like key harp.
That sounds really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a Swedish. I think it's a traditional Swedish instrument. So the nickel harpa with an N-Y-C-K-E-L.
It looks kind of like a keytar.
Like, or like the Beatles who played the sitar.
Well, I have an electric sitar. I love those instruments. They're beautiful.
Oh, do you really?
Yes, sir. Oh, I'm looking at the nickel harpa now. That's really cool. Yeah, I'd love to get my hands on one of those. That's for sure.
Yeah.
The thing is, you know, I'm a composer. You know, I compose for TV and film, and I'm a producer, you know, songwriter, all the above. So I'm always looking for unique instruments that create, you know, very unique sounds. So, you know, any composer, especially nowadays, when you step into their studio, you know, they're going to have a nice array of cool instruments. So this one looks super dope. I mean, I'd love to get my hands on one of these. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'll pass along a photo I took of a dude jamming out on one when I, you know, if I find it, but I have it here in my photos somewhere. But so speaking of which, why don't we jump into that though? So you're talking about, you know, you're a producer, a composer and stuff. What are, like, you know, maybe just get into the brief, like, give us the elevator pitch of, like, hey, I'm Michael Ripoll. They call me Nomad. And, you know, I'm this nomadic composer guy. Like, this is what I do. I've done Men in Black 3. Like, let's get into it, yeah. You know?
So, again, when I started, you know, it was Michael Ripoll, just because that was my name. And, you know, I spent many years like that. Born in New York, raised half in New York, then half in Florida. And then we went back to New York, and then we went back to Florida. So just right there, by the time I was 18, we had gone back and forth from New York to Florida twice as a family.
And where in Florida were you going?
South Florida, just north of Miami, Fort Lauderdale area.
Mm. And that's the Cuban roots? Is that what that is then? Or?
Well, when my father came over, he landed in Miami, and then he eventually made his way to New York, and that's where my folks met. And then I think my mom had been in Florida for a while too. They went up and down the coast between Florida and New York. And then my first marriage, I decided, you know, we had to leave Florida if I really wanted to pursue music seriously. So we went to Nashville, you know, with, like I said, with my first wife. And we were there for 8 years. And I did really well, you know, knock wood, thank God. I started, actually for a small while, I started working in a bagel shop early in the morning. So I would get up at like 4 a.m., be in the bagel shop by 5 a.m., and I would work till about 11, right? 11 a.m.
Okay.
Then I would come home, take a little nap, and then I would get ready to start doing music for the rest of the day. And I did that for maybe a year or so until I got more gigs and I got some more notoriety in Nashville. Then I started doing a lot of session work in Nashville. So I did a lot of albums, especially in what we call the CCM genre, which is the contemporary Christian music genre. Oh, cool. Did a lot of work there and a lot of the work in the gospel genre. So between gospel and CCM, I did a ton of records. And then I felt like, you know what? It's really cool. Actually, I owned three homes in Nashville at the time. Two townhomes and one standalone. And I was doing really well. And you know, we were saving up money and investing, and it was good. But then I said, you know what? I reached my ceiling here in Nashville. I can't grow anymore as an artist or as a composer or as a musician in general. I just, you know, so I could have just stayed the course that I was on and kept making the amount of money I was making and just maybe tried to invest a little more and just do what. But I just had this bug that I had to come out to L.A. I had a bug.
That's the nomadic side in you.
That's right. It, man. I couldn't get away from it. Anyway, we came out here and we ended up getting divorced shortly thereafter. But as soon as I came out here, I got a lot of work because I had been hustling my network, right? So it was before the iPhone. I came out in 2005. But do you remember the Palm Pilots?
Yeah.
I had just gotten a Palm Pilot. I moved out here. Man, I wore that Palm Pilot out. We moved to Valencia, of all places, into the town center apartments in Valencia, which is kind of fancy, but not really. But my buddy lived in Valencia at the time, and he said, you'll love it. It's very, family-oriented. And it was great. And every morning, I would go down to the coffee shop right there in the little town center. And I'm a city guy. I love action in the city. I love little shops and cafes and bars and pubs. I just love that vibe. Anyway, I would go sit at that cafe every day for 3-4 hours and just wear that Palm Pilot out, sending emails, making phone calls and texts. Before you know it, within like 2 weeks, I got the call to play on the film score for Mr. and Mrs. Smith, with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. Yep.
That's right.
And the composer for that is John Powell. So a dear friend of mine referred me because I keep coming back to this network because he, you know, you gotta cultivate your network, right? We all know that.
Yes.
You know, that's business 101. So my dear friend Alex Al, who at the time just finished up the Michael Jackson stuff, you know, he referred me to John Powell. Now John Powell is like one of the biggest film composers out here. So John called me and it was great. And this is the pitch that John gave Alex. He said, listen, I need a guitar player that can play country, funk, rock and roll, and flamenco.
And you raise your hand like, that's me.
So my buddy Alex was like, oh shoot, I think I know just the guy. And I think he just moved here. So he hit me up. He's like, man, you're here, right? I said, yeah, I'm here, bro. He's like, okay, well, I threw your name in. I got the call 2005, Mother's Day. Mother's Day at like 10 a.m. Now, at the time, we didn't have any kids. So I was like, you know, hey, I got to go. You know, it was cool. So I went to the studio. I went to this gorgeous mansion on the top of a hill in the Palisades. Now, you know, listen to all of us LA, you know, people were like, oh, wow.
So LA.
We know the Palisades. Really, it's called Pacific Palisades, but we call it the Palisades. You know, but you could just see the three of us were like, oh, wow, you know. But, you know, people who live in Dakota listening to this are like, what the hell is that? I don't care, you know. Anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or Kenya. I think we have some people in Africa.
That's so awesome. There you go. I've been to South Africa a bunch of times. And Zimbabwe, actually. I love that place. It's so cool. So anyway, so you go up and literally you think to yourself, okay, come on. The guy can't have the mansion at the top of the hill. Nope. He had the damn mansion at the top of the hill. You couldn't go any further. Okay. So you drive up there.
Yeah.
And I had like a little, you know, Ford, a Ford Explorer or maybe like a Ranger or something. It wasn't even fancy. So I'm getting up there with all this gear, you know, because I couldn't, we have cartage companies, but I couldn't get a cartage company to schlep my gear because it was Sunday, Mother's Day. So I shoved a bunch of guitars and amps and pedals in my.
And you were going to record at the guy's house?
Yeah, because what happened was John is such the consummate professional that he built a custom built studio in his house.
Of course he did.
But he would also go work at the big studios, at the big sound stages, you know, the Sony lot, the Warner Brothers lot, you know, to record the orchestras. But as a guitar player, what I do is what we call overdub. So I come in after the orchestra is recorded.
Oh, you're beating me to the punch. I had questions about that.
So anyway, I walk in, you know, and an assistant meets me at the door and they help me unload my stuff and we bring it in and they're like, okay, John will be with you in just a little while, you know, so just go ahead and get acclimated. There's some accoutrements over here, some water, blah, 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 you know. So I'm getting acclimated. I'm a little nervous, but by this point I had logged a lot of studio hours in Nashville. So I was no stranger to the professional recording studio, but this was my first film session date. Okay. Remember, we used that term date, right? This is my first film date. Yeah. Okay. So I go in, we get all set up and I sit down and I see a music stand with my score with all the notes written out for the guitar part. So I start thumbing through it and start looking at it and start warming up with my classical guitar, just getting ready. And I look at this giant, giant screen. Now, again, 2005, excuse me, a 60-inch HD screen was not really popular, right?
Yeah. Oh, man, that was a lot of money.
Well, he had like a 930 million inch HD screen. Like, it was the biggest it was the biggest HD screen I've ever seen in my life, or, you know, whatever. So I'm looking at the screen, and all of a sudden, you know, who do I see? I see gorgeous Angelina Jolie on the screen, right? So, and like, she's with the long hair and this dress that's cut all the way up the thigh. And I'm like, I'm just thinking to myself, wow, this is why I came to LA. All right. You know, so, I mean, granted, she's not my girlfriend, but I'm just getting to perform music while watching her. This is great. You know, and then I see Brad Pitt and I'm like, oh, this is really cool. So I'm glamorizing the story. But look, at the time, it wasn't glamorous. I was very nervous, but I was professional enough to hold my scruples.
You muscled through.
Yeah.
Well, he had to be.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Was that the music over the tango stuff and all that stuff?
Now you beat me to the punch. That's it. So that ended up being the tango scene in the middle of the restaurant where they're trying to.
Oh, what? That was you?
That's me playing the classical tango guitar, man. Yeah.
Oh man, that is awesome.
Yeah,
that is so hilarious.
And then it turned into the whole film. Well, a couple months later, he called me back for Happy Feet, and then he called me back for Happy Feet Two, and then he called me back for P.S. I Love You, and then another one with Cameron Diaz and Tom Cruise.
Made an impression.
Yeah, thank you. I don't take it for granted. You know, John has been a great resource for me here in L.A. And here's the interesting thing: you only get those calls. Well, for me, I only got those calls once or twice, three times a year. And, you know, back in the day, I keep saying back in the day, think 70s, 80s, even 90s. The session musicians, or always, as we call them, the session cats, okay, were doing three of those sessions a day. So if you think about like that, those are well-paying sessions, you know?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You could make, you know, a session cat back in the day, let's say the 80s and 90s, could literally pull in $3,000 to $4,500 a day.
Wow. Is that in today's dollars or then dollars?
Well, I mean, that's like today's dollars. Like right now, if you could do a session like that and pull in some good money. Yeah.
That's some cash.
Yeah. And a lot of those guys, here's the crazy part, and I'm not exaggerating. Believe me, this information is documented, and that's why I started my podcast, because I like to interview a lot of these guys. Those cats were doing 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
So a lot of...
Man, like 15 grand a week.
Come on, you know.
And then you coast. Break. Then you can be like, I take the rest of the month off, or, you know, I'll go. I could, you know, vacay.
No,
do more work.
No,
whatever you want.
Ted, no.
Ted, why would you? Because it's not only you're making the money, but you're doing what you love.
That's true.
Yeah.
So it's like a double like. it's like wonderful, you know?
Yeah, you're doing really cool music that you love. And I mean, you're doing something really cool that you love. Here's the thing though, Ted, and it is a misnomer, because I think all of us think, man, if I made, you know, $1.5 million this year.
Four day work month.
You know, whatever. If I made that, right. Then I'm that's it. I'm retiring. I'm going to, you know, wherever you want to go and retire. But here's the thing. In the music business,
you're hungry.
But in the music business, if you stop working, you stop getting the calls. Turn down that one phone call, you know what happens? Let's say John Powell is hanging out with Danny Elfman one day, right?
Yeah.
Well, here's how it happened. So Danny says to John, hey, do you know a guitar player that's really versatile that can play a lot of different, you know, genres? And John says, well, just so happens I do. So he gave him my info. But imagine if I didn't take Danny's call.
Yeah.
Then, or, you know, if I didn't respond to it and make the gig, then Danny would have been like, hey, John, that guy you sent me is a flake, man. Forget it. That's the kiss.
Right.
That's
right. And then you burn two bridges.
That's the kiss of death.
John's going to be like, what's up?
Yeah. And if you say, oh, no, it's not that I didn't want to do it. I was out of town. I was on vacation with my family.
They don't even care.
Your vacation.
They don't care.
Right. Vacation. Who the hell do you think you are that you could go on vacation?
Well, and if you're thinking about something like, you know, I mean, there's been, you know, I mean, obviously we hear about tons of movies that are hundreds of millions of dollars to produce. And then the guitarist is going to hold up the production of a $300 million movie, right? And you're like, dude, no, man, I'm like snorkeling in Fiji. I can't be bothered with you. You know, I mean, like, really?
That's why I always say, you know, I always tell musicians, especially young, up and coming musicians, look, if you think you're going to negotiate, you have to be willing to walk away from the deal, period. Just quit. Like, there is no negotiating. Mm, the definition of negotiating is having so much money that you literally don't need to be there negotiating.
But I call that f*** you money.
Exactly.
I have so much money that I can just tell you to f*** off.
Exactly. You know? I love it. That's it. Chicago, yeah, see? Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
I love it. Yeah.
And that's so, like, amazing that you have to put yourself into that position, because, you know, I have a lot of family that worked in the film industry, and my cousin still works at Warner Brothers and so on. But my Uncle Bud, he did, like, I mean, mostly like craft service kind of stuff, right? So he's doing the food and he's doing all the stuff, you know, and the guy that everybody loves.
Yeah.
And he would just get calls at random.
Right.
Because he was so good. He was so good at what he did, and he catered. I mean, he knew if it was like a Jewish holiday, like, bam, all the Jewish food's out. And he knew if it, you know, whatever it was, right? Like, and he just did his job to the maximum.
Right.
And he would get called all, you know, for all kinds of shows, movies, TV, you name it, you know? And the minute you don't pick up, or you say you can't do it, slowly the phone stops ringing.
That's right.
And it was like, no matter how good he was, he just got fewer jobs and less work over time, you know? And
it's incredible.
Yeah. The show must go on, right? Like, everybody, all those other parties, all those other sessions, they still happen even if you're not available. And then you're competing with that guy or whoever they got to do at that time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, let's put it this way. The movie's going to get released on the date it's going to get released,
regardless
if you're snorkeling in Fiji or not, right? You know, I mean,
that's why those directors are always like, you know, the directors are on that carousel too, because they do have that F you money. So they walk from picture deals all the time.
You know? Oh, and I'm sure actors, I mean, Brad Pitt or something, like you were saying, you know, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie, right? I mean, they're going to do a movie. It's going to be on their time frame, yeah, because they're so, like, they're just like at the top of their game.
Did you hear the story about Jack Nicholson?
No, what's that? I love Jack. Come on.
So he would write into all of his film contracts that he would put in the Lakers home schedule, and every single Lakers game, he would have to be off and driven over to the Staples Center to see all the Lakers games, because he had season tickets and he didn't miss a single Lakers game.
That's like, what, 42 days or something?
I mean, wow, that's incredible. Yeah, but see, so that's the upper echelon. And you know, you mentioned Uncle Bud. So let's just call it the Uncle Bud syndrome. That is true. UBS.
I'm going to have him listen to this episode.
Yeah, Uncle Bud, much love and respect to you, brother, because UBS is real, okay? I've experienced it myself, and I am experiencing it right now because, Jim, not only what you said, whereas if you miss one phone call or you can't take one of the gigs or something happens, already that's a strike against you. But then, no matter how good you are, you said the magic word, no matter how good you are, there's always going to be somebody else vying for the position. And there's always going to be somebody else that's willing to undercut your price. And there's always going to be somebody else who's willing to stab you in the back. These are universal laws of business, right? That's just the way, it's not personal.
Right.
I call it a race to the bottom.
Yes. Precisely.
You know,
like crabs in a bucket. That, yes.
That's why I like podcasting. Cause you know, there's so many podcasts out there and I really feel like the podcast community is not like that. We all like lift each other up. And I think it's such a new kind of growth industry that people are doing it as a hobby. You know, people are doing it to spread their expertise. So there's so many,
but we're also not This American Life either. Right.
Right.
Like at the top end, right? At the top of the echelon. Right. Again, right. It goes to that.
But how many are there? There's 700,000 podcasts out there. And so I think there.
But consider this. There's not even, let's say there's under a million podcasts right now. In 5 years, there's going to be well over that, right? You know? Maybe even in a year or two. So, you know, by the way, I do think it's interesting that podcasting, again, just like the term nomad, all of a sudden became like, you know, trendy. Like I've been listening to podcasts for almost 10 years now. I freaking love podcasts. I'm baffled as to why all of a sudden it became so popular. Do you guys know how the trajectory of that?
Well, I can tell you personally that it's the cheapest midlife crisis I've ever had in my life.
There you go.
So. You know, I first came into I used to wrench in a bike shop during undergrad and graduate school. And there was a guy in the bike shop and I said, it was like winter, it's raining. He said, oh yeah, I just ride my bike and I listen to podcasts. This is like 2000, like maybe 5 or 6, something like
that. Right,
right. And I said, well, what's a podcast? And he said, oh, it's like this talk show. It's like, it's talk radio, but it's about the things you're interested in.
Right.
And I thought, whoa, well, where do you find them? You know? And he's like, well, iTunes has them. And I'm like, wow, okay, well, I'm on iTunes.
Yeah.
So I went and started like searching. I'm like, this is cool.
Exactly.
And you're like, there's 50,000 podcasts. How can there be so many podcasts?
There's 30 podcasts. I like this one, you know?
I think one of the first ones I listened to had Steve Jobs, and then one of the second was the CEO of Starbucks. What's his name?
Schultz. I don't know.
Schultz. David Schultz, I think. Yeah.
Not David.
I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, yeah. Anyway, and I've always been into the motivational type speaking anyway. I love you know, that type of content. So when I really discovered podcasts, I was like, oh cow, you know. So, and I love the multitasking. Like you said, you could be doing something else and listening. You could be getting uplifted and encouraged, right? You know, this positive information.
Yeah. And the great thing now, so as our podcast has been going on, I've been training for this mountain bike, this 100-mile mountain bike race in Colorado.
That's awesome.
And I'll go out on these like 7-8 hour whatever training rides, you know, like over big mountains and all this stuff. And I'll be like, okay, well, you know, boop, that's 8 hours worth of podcasting. I'll just get out of the way. You know what
that's
I mean?
That's right.
Yeah. But the thing about podcasting though is, and I think going back to what that guy said, it's like talk radio, but the things you care about.
Yes.
Right.
I don't care about like right-wing politics and all the crazy stuff that's on talk radio, but I do care about like, I don't know, like science stuff or bicycling stuff or like home brewing stuff and all the little niche things I'm into, like podcasting fills that niche, you know? And I think that's kind of where like Ted and I got into with the Trailer Junkies is that, you know, we didn't hear any, there's a lot of movie review stuff. Movie comes out, everybody just talks about it, bitches about it, whatever they do. But nobody's talking about it like 9 months before it's released.
Right.
You know, and then we're like, well, let's just do that thing.
That's clever.
Yeah, you find your little niche and you just kind of squeeze in and like, I'd say the hardest thing is there's so many podcasts that you just get lost in the noise.
Well, that's right. What happened with me and my podcast, The Career Musician. You know, very similar to your story. I found my niche. You know, I'm speaking to career musicians and talking about the business and what it really takes.
Right.
And obviously it's interesting because like you guys are asking me questions. And what it really takes, you know, the no bullshit answer to what it really takes to be a successful career musician. Let me tell you, yeah, you can go on for freaking days about that.
Yes. And I think you're naturally like a motivational person, like
charismatic, I would say.
Yeah. And
you
always like are when I speak to you, when we talk, it's always an uplifting event. I appreciate that.
Thank you,
and,
man.
And I
like Tony Robbins. It's like I'm talking to Tony Robbins.
See, I love that. That's the best compliment I ever got because I fucking love Tony Robbins.
That's hilarious. He's another like guy who podcasts and all this stuff, right? Or like Tim Ferriss.
Tim Ferriss, you know, Tony Robbins. Gary Vee, Gary Vaynerchuk. I love him.
Right.
And he's doing. And I really love that he's speaking to the young generation. That's very important because let's face it, guys, we're all in our mid 40s, right? Roughly early to mid 40s.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, how many people out there are just starting out in their early to mid 20s? They really need a push in the right direction.
You know, with that said, I think a lot of it is, and I know when I was in my 20s and stuff, it's like I have ideas. I just don't know what the heck to do with them.
We don't know how to execute them. We don't even know how to organize our thoughts.
You don't know how to execute them. Exactly.
Well, so I've been really caught up recently in the startup space. You know, I have a little side project I'm helping out with. Hopefully it goes somewhere. We'll see what's up with that. But there's a podcast that's been around for 10 years. It's called This Week in Startup, and it's hosted by Jason Calacanis. And last week, I actually called into his show, and it was amazing because I was so nervous that my stomach was turning, and I was like,
I do
this every week. I talk to Jimmy every week. I'm just on a podcast. But because it was Jason on the other end, you know, it had this weight to it, and he's been podcasting for over 10 years, and his stuff is amazing. It's about the startup culture and being an angel investor and things like that. But it's more than that. It's like, you know, it goes into every facet of, you know, just that motivational space. So,
I love it.
It's amazing. Like Career Musician is the same way. I get a lot of energy from that, from your podcast. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you.
So you just started your second season?
Yes, just started the second season. And guys, I gotta say this. The reason I got in.
Can we back up for 1 second? Yeah. Before you start talking about the second season, just give us like the quick, you know, like what is your podcast to plug it so everybody knows what we're talking about, and then you can get into what, you know, the second season or first season, whatever.
Okay, cool. Okay. Thank you. So again, I feel that I was very fortunate enough to have good parents who, you know, raised me well, thank God. And they're great people. And my dad, because he came from a culture that was less fortunate than we are as Americans, he really understood the value of education and the value of self-confidence and believing in yourself. And, you know, he always pushed me in that direction. So throughout my whole, you know, young life coming up, practicing, that's all I did was practice 8 to 10 hours a day, my guitar. That's all I did. And to the point where I had no social life. From the time I was 12.
Your choice?
No, my
his,
choice. My choice. And this is the deal. They used to try to get me to leave my room and I wouldn't. From the time I was 12 or 13 till about 18, 19, that's all I did, man, was practice and study music.
And you even had your bandmates come over and you forced them to practice.
That's right.
Dude, you're like Buddy Holly or something, man. You're like forcing your friends to practice.
And- so that, I told Ted that story. I think I told that story at Guitar Ninjas in the workshop. Yeah. So
yeah, exactly.
So I was. Look, man. There's one word that I think is so important, and it's the capital D word. It's discipline. Somehow or another, I had this intrinsic discipline just built into me. I don't know where it came from because my brothers are very different. My dad is even different. My dad was more of a free spirit than I was. I was extremely regimented, which my dad was military, so he appreciated that and he taught me about that.
So U.S. or military or Cuban or?
No, he was U.S. He was in the Army, not by choice, by draft.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Ah.
But it was kind of ironic because they didn't want to give him his citizenship, and then they drafted him. And then he went down to the local office, and he's like, guys, you're drafting me, but you haven't let me become a citizen yet. And they were like, tell you what, son, if you serve the U.S. military, we'll give you your citizenship. You know, it's like, okay. Like, it was one of those weird things. So anyway, side tangent.
So that was Vietnam era, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that was Nam. Yeah, that was Nam. And he served in Okinawa. Yeah. He was stationed in Okinawa. You know, Okinawa, Japan, the islands just off of Japan. Thank God he didn't see like heavy combat or anything, you know.
Yeah.
Very fortunate. Anyway, so I had this weird background. I always had the ability to do the right and left brain. I was very creative, but I was also very regimented.
You had the business sense somewhere back in there.
Yeah, somewhere back in there. And I think it's because my folks were always entrepreneurs. They always had their own businesses. And then my dad was like, hey, man, you should check out this guy, Earl Nightingale. So I don't know if you guys know who Earl Nightingale is. Does that ring a bell? All right.
No, I don't.
So do some research on this. Earl Nightingale was probably the godfather of motivational. Okay, so he came up. Okay. You know, probably we're talking about his day. His heyday was the 40s and 50s and 60s. So by the time the 60s were rolling around, he was probably already in, you know, his 40s, right? And so by the time I started listening to him, I mean, the guy was like 80, you know, and this was in the 90s. Okay. Earl was the most well-tempered, most pleasant, charismatic man you could ever imagine. I never met him, but I used to listen to his books on tape, on cassette. So my dad used to get his books from there. So I started into that, and then all of a sudden the bug bit me. And then from there, I got into Dr. Wayne Dyer. Do you know Wayne Dyer? He's another motivational speaker from that era. And then I got into Zig Ziglar. Do you remember Zig Ziglar?
Zig Ziglar,
love him.
Yeah.
And then
he's the famous one.
And then another one, Jim Rohn. Okay, I don't know if you know Jim Rohn, but these guys were like the godfathers of motivational speaking, and they passed the baton.
Didn't Jim Rohn call like Jim Everett, Chris Everett, or something?
Oh, I don't know.
Ted, you're thinking you're right about that.
That's Jim Rohn.
No, Jim.
Yeah, but that's not a motivational.
No,
sports commentary.
No, Jim
guy.
Rohn, R-O-H-N.
Oh. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, Ted, you're right, but you're wrong.
Anyway.
No, man, you're right.
I'm going to have another Sally Citro.
I only got one because the guy who bought it for me only gave me one, so I'm stuck.
Ted, you give him the full four pack?
I know.
Jeepers.
So, all right, so I'm going to do my train of thought here. So then I'm listening. So all those guys inspired Anthony Robbins. So then Anthony Robbins comes along, okay?
Is that Tony Robbins?
Tony Robbins. And now it's in the 90s, okay? And I'm a young man now, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21. So I started listening to Anthony Robbins. So here's my routine, okay? In the morning, I wake up, or even prior to graduating, you know, I wake up, I go to school, to a magnet school, a performing arts school down in South Florida, Dillard High School. I love you guys. You guys did so much for me. The teachers down there were amazing. So I get up, go to school. I go to, you know, half the day academics, half the day music. I come home, I start practicing, and I'm listening to these motivational, you know, speakers on tape. And then I'm practicing. I go eat dinner with the family. I go back and I practice. I study some music. I write some music. I record some music on my little mini four-track recorder, you know, back in the day. That's all I did, man. And then I got a gig. By the time I was 18, just graduating high school, I got a gig at a popular nightclub down on the strip, in the Fort Lauderdale Strip, on the beach, from a buddy of mine who I went to school with, Jason Beach. I love you, Jason. I just saw him a couple weeks ago. He got me the gig. He's like, hey, come on down. 6 nights a week, okay, playing from 9 to 3 a.m., 9 p.m., 3 a.m.
No way.
Right? Six sets a night. Okay, now you ready? Drum roll, please. I made $100 a night, so I made $600 a week.
What?
At 18.
So how long is a set?
They were 40-minute sets, 40 on, 20 off.
Holy
fuck. I was 18, making six bills a week. I had that gig for 3 years. Don't you know who I thought I was?
That's amazing.
But I took it with a stride of humility. Thank God I never got into the drugs and alcohol scene back then. You know, I never got into that because, again, I was so regimented. So I would go do that gig. I would come home, go to sleep. I was still living at home. I started throwing my parents a couple bucks for rent because it was the you know, the responsible thing to do. We talked about it, and I respected that. But then I'd get up around, you know, 10, 11 a.m. because I went to Beverly Hills, and I'd start practicing again. And then, you know, I might go work out, and I'll listen to, you know, Anthony Robbins or Earl Nightingale, and then I'd come home and practice again, and then I'd go to work and do the gig. That was my life. That's all I did. So I built, my point is, I'm leading up to this, I built this foundation, which I truly believe, and I'm grateful for, and I was truly blessed, and I'm so grateful, and I do not take it for granted. Hashtag gratitude like a mother. So I built this foundation of solid work ethic and you know, clear communication and positivity and all this stuff. And I always felt that I had it in me. I always had the inquisitive gene. I wish there was Google when I was a teenager. I believe if there was Google back then, I truly would be a millionaire, because I, you know, I just feel like I'm not blaming myself, you know.
How many times I've said that?
You know what I'm saying? It's like the amount of information that you can actually, you know, ingest and then learn, you know, come on. So anyway, that's my foundation. I always felt like I had this journalistic gene in me, because I would interview the guys in the band. And these guys, so I was 18, 19, and some of these guys were in their, you know, early 30s. And they were like, who the hell is this kid coming in here asking me questions about my daily routine and about what inspired me to get into music? And, you know, and I would go ask them these questions and I would take notes, and they thought I was crazy. So what is that? That's 25 years ago that I was preparing myself for a podcast that I didn't even know I was going to do. So now here we are.
That's exactly right. And that's what I tell kids. Like, I work in a high school, right? And I tell kids, I'm like, you know, luck is opportunity met with preparation.
Preparation, baby. Yes.
You know, totally. It's like, you're not lucky. You've just made the, you know, you've been prepared for the opportunity that's been presented to you. But I think the other thing too that you said, you know, if you go back a little bit, the main thing you said was you would go out, you would do your gigs, you would do your sets and all these things, but it was that you weren't, like, I mean, to paraphrase, in other words, that you were sober doing it.
Yes, it was hardly sex, drugs, and rock and roll for me.
So many, and I think that's, you know, like, the people who make quick stardom, they get so caught into the drugs, they get, you know, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, like you said, right? They get so caught into that they lose themselves in it, and it just, it crashed. I mean, Kurt Cobain or whatever it is, right? It crashes on them.
Yeah.
And it's over, where the working musician is somebody who makes a good living at it, but they punch the clock, they show up, they're the working man, you know?
Hence the career musician, because my elevator pitch is, listen, guys and gals, people, I don't care who you are, how you identify. If you think you're going to be a musician and you're going to have the easy life, think again, because,
like, you're Mick Jagger.
Come on. Look, know? The only people in this world, human of the human race, that get away with doing nothing are bums who just live on the street, and that's their prerogative, and royalty. Now, royalty can be, we could be talking of, you know, the royalty of, you know, kingships and all that, or we could just be talking about high level celebrities who have all the money, you know, like you said, the FU money. So my point is, guys, just because you're going to be a musician doesn't mean you can dick around all day. Like, you have to treat this like a job, just like any other job. And yes, that's the premise.
Right. And probably more so.
You have to be more regimented. Yeah.
Yes, it's so dangerous to get caught up into this lazy cycle or this self, what do you call it? This, you know, how you do self-sabotage, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get so passionate about it because this is the, I live this truth.
You know, and it's so funny that you talk about that stuff because, like, as an amateur, I shoot photography and I always have these, like, fantasies of being this like high level photographer, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, and I go into it thinking like, oh man, I'm going to do like Jimmy Chin, right? I'm going to do Nike ads on the top of some mountain doing hella skiing. Right. I'm going to do all this crazy stuff. And like, sure, I've gone snowboarding and sure, I've done ice climbing and I do all this, you know, and whatever. But then all of a sudden it's like you come into it and you're like, yeah, but I just don't have like the cojones these guys have to like lay it all out there.
Right.
You know, like I still got to go to work on Monday morning.
you still got to come home. You still got to come home and kiss the wife and kids. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Because the way I look at it is like, if I jump, you know, everybody jumps.
Right.
That's right.
So I can't just say, I mean, if I was single and I'm 26 years old or whatever, like, you know, if I fail, mom and dad, I failed. Can you bail me out for a couple of months, you know?
But see, there's a huge little caveat there. Even so, when you're in your early mid-20s and you think you could do that, yeah, there is truth on one side of that coin. That's true. You can just do anything you want. You're invincible and you're almost, you're not held accountable, right? You're unaccountable.
Right.
The other side is if you don't take the responsibility and the initiative to be proactive, 20 years down the line when you're 46, you're going to be sorry.
That's right.
That's it.
And, you know, and that, but that's the thing though. It's like, it's one of those things where, just like you said, you're shooting every day, thousands of frames a day to like build your eye. I mean, become compatible, so you know when something runs across the frame, you know the button on the camera to hit without thinking, right? It's instinctive.
Muscle memory.
And that's how you, muscle memory, right? That's how you are with the guitar. You just know how to do it.
Yes, and I even take it to like some really peripheral, crazy extents where, because I travel, you know, I still, look, I'm the music director for a guy named Babyface, which we might get into. It doesn't matter whether we do or we don't. Anyway, I still travel with him. You know, we do what I call weekend warrior dates. You know, we just leave on a Friday, come home on a Sunday, maybe once or twice a month, not often. Anyway, I get so anal retentive about my whole lifestyle that I believe what you just said. So as a photographer, you're developing a good eye. As a musician, you're developing a good ear, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And there's also that sixth sense. We call it feel, right? Oh man, that person just, they can feel the music. They know how to feel it. They know how to feel that shot. They set up that scene. They just felt, you know, it's just, again,
the intangibles.
The intangibles. I'm the same way with tangible peripherals. I believe the way you should pack your backpack is that you could find everything in your backpack with your eyes closed.
Mm. Oh man, you're going back to my army days now.
You know what I'm saying? You should know exactly, when I get that pack in my hands, I know exactly what to do and how to do it. I could stitch myself up with my eyes closed from the accoutrements. It's like hardcore. And kids don't know that these days. And waking up at 4:30 a.m. every day as a challenge, a 30-day, they're like, why would you do that? What do you mean? Why would I not do that?
Or like people who do like cold shower
I do that too.
Right?
No. Oh, I got that from Tony Robbins because he's been doing.
You and Tony Robbins. Yeah.
Well, he's been doing that ice bath thing. What do you call the ice chamber.
The ice bath, yeah.
I don't have an ice chamber, so I'm like, I'm going to try it. And let me tell you, you can condition your mind. You really can, man. Because the first thing when that ice cold water hits you, your first reaction is to jump out of it, right?
Right, right.
But exactly, I just started putting it on warm and then lukewarm and then a little more cold and a little more cold. And I just gradually work the hot water out. And it actually works. And when you get done, you feel like you just did 5 lines of cocaine. You're like, oh my God.
But Nomad, I don't know what that means, what that's like. So
as the working musician. Oh wait, what is it? The career musician. The career, career musician, you wouldn't know because you're not
coke. I am not doing coke, you know, but I would imagine it's like that.
All right, gentlemen, man, we covered a lot. But hey, how about we table it there? You know, no, man, we could always have you on again, but let's get into a movie trailer.
Let's do it, because Ted, nice. By the way, let me just say this, folks, for any of you listeners who aren't aware, I believe what Ted and Jim are doing here is extremely awesome, and I have to give props to Ted. He helped my podcast immensely. Like, he took me under his wing. He did some marketing classes with me for, like, we did like three or four classes where he came over and tutored me on the whole process of podcasting, and it really helped. Cool. So Ted, I really appreciate that, brother.
Oh, thank you. And I hope I saw you shared some numbers. We got some good blowout second season. You really are hitting it big, and you got what network are you in now? You're in a network of musical podcasts?
Yeah, so I'm on the Pantheon Media Group. It's like a network of podcasters, a digital magazine for podcasts, if you will. And it's really good. Yeah, they're really great.
And how about you do the most important thing and tell us the name of your podcast?
Yeah, it's simply The Career Musician by Nomad.
There you go.
The Career Musician by Nomad.
And you can find it everywhere.
Yeah, and Ted was telling me that he was working with you, but I didn't realize he was so impactful, you know? Like,
he was.
You know, because he's like, I'm working with this guy. He tells me every once in a while, what he's doing. But, like, I don't know what he's doing because I'm not there. You know?
No, but then, the second season launched and we're very happy. I loved getting the messages from Nomad.
Yeah. Thanks. Success. Well, and Ted turned me on to Slack, which is a great platform for us creatives who do this stuff. And again, that was just one of the resources he turned me on to, but fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's so funny because Slack is such a thing where if you're a pure creative that you cannot deal with having Slack. Like, you kind of, you use it, but you use it begrudgingly because it really interferes with the creative process. But if you're at all in any kind of organizational spirit or mode, or if you need to switch on an organizational pattern in your workday, it really helps trigger that, and it if you use it properly, it's like, it's work with fun. Work as if you're in the same office. So it's like, you know, you get to work with somebody, and you and I are, you know, we're all sharing and we're in the green room and stuff, but it's just a familiarity that goes beyond like emailing stuff back and forth. So I appreciate it, but thank you.
It is. It's so much more effective than emailing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And before we get into the movie trailer, and you can actually see what it's like to be a trailer junkie.
Yeah.
The thing about like interviews and things that I enjoy is, you know, I try to go into it, and I don't know how you do it, Ted, but I try to go into it without much preparation. You know, I do some background research on who we're going to talk to and everything, just so I'm not like, you know, I'm not ignorant. But at the same time, though, like I just want it to be free form and flowing. And I think it's kind of funny, though, that, you know, you go into it as like industry interviews about people who work in the movies and TV and do all this stuff. And like we kind of loosely touched on it tonight. And I bring it up because it's something that I find so enjoyable, that we don't just sit there and stick to a script and just, you know, drill in questions at people, you know, and it's more just like a free flow. And the great thing is, like, I mean, I don't think we talked like, I mean, I wanted to get into Danny Elfman and I wanted to talk.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I said we're going to have you back, you know, but like I wanted to talk about all kinds of stuff. We never really got to it, you know, and that's okay, though, because I think all this stuff is so cool
right.
that,
you know, I mean, hell, we talked about Uncle Bud for crying out loud. You
Uncle
know?
Bud.
Like, and now I'm going to go watch Night and Day with Anne and say, oh, the guitar in
there
Night
you
and
go.
Day is Nomad.
Exactly.
So the Danny Elfman thing turned into Men in Black 3. That was the score that I played on.
Oh.
So I can tell you that in 2 seconds. So you remember if you remember the opening scene, if you don't remember, you go back. Nicole Schwarzenegger, whatever, the real hot chick from the Pussycat Dolls, Nicole the singer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just don't tell my wife I noticed.
You know? Yeah, okay. So she's walking in the first, in the opening scene, she's walking with a bustier on and she's holding a cake, a birthday cake.
Yeah. I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Super steamy scene, right? And you hear this rock and roll guitar playing. That's me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh, man, amazing.
Opening scene. Okay, that's enough. All right.
All right. Well, let's hit In Fabric.
Okay.
Man, what a cool idea, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is like outrageous.
Yes.
It is outrageous.
It is, but in a cool way.
So I picked In Fabric this week. You know, I sometimes get a little flack for picking like obscure things or A24 over the big blockbusters, you know. We had Onward, a Disney Pixar movie, have a trailer come out this week. Netflix had Dark Crystal, which is a Jim Henson series that's coming back this week. But I picked In...
What?
So next week...
Totally missed that one.
Next week we're gonna get to it. Both my kids and some other fans are begging for Dark Crystal, so we'll do Dark Crystal next week. But I wanted to stick with In Fabric because it has so many elements in it that were shocking and kind of, you know, that alienating elements is what I call them. But it's anything
there
that snaps you into the scene, or if you're distracted, it pulls you back into the frame. Normally you'll get it once or twice in a good trailer. This just hits you at every scene change. There's something that's going on that's just not quite right. And,
yes.
And they really hit it on the nose when I have the IndieWire quote in front of me, hypnotic and wondrous, equal parts Lynch and Argento. And Argento, because I'm not big into the Italian film scene.
Neither am I.
But Suspiria was remade this past year, so I knew that it had that crazy witch dancing kind of, you know, that similar space. But the Lynch thing, it's just perfect. It's amazing that they can make this movie. You know, it's clear it's an A24 film. A24 feels like they may want to pull back on doing so many horror movies. I know they try to do some other types of dramas, but it feels like they're just so heavy on horror.
Lately they have, yeah.
But they're always contending for Oscars. They're always in the Oscar conversation. I think the last one we did was The Last Black Man in San Francisco. And it's just this, you know, character study. And it has a house that's kind of plays a character in the process. So this has another object which plays a character in this dress. And the dress is like this, you know, it's a demonic dress. And it's a constant foil to her attempts at getting rid of it or cleaning it. It fights everything. It's almost like the cartoon where the man's trying to kill the dog or throw the dog out, and the dog always ends up back on the front stoop. You know, it's like
I keep telling Clarissa, don't go shopping. You never know what you're gonna get.
So what do you guys take? Yeah.
Well, Ted, when you first sent me the link, I got to say, I'm not going to lie. I was like, Ted, what is this shit? Because I was like, come on, Ted, don't make me sit and forgive me, ladies, but don't make me sit through some chick flick, you know. Like, I don't want to watch, you know, the guiding light here in a trailer. So, but then, you know, I was like, hey, this is my job. They're putting me on this podcast. I have to do it. I better buckle down and pay
attention.
Right.
That's right. We're paying you. You know, we gave you Trailer Junkies pajamas in the green room.
Wait, first of all, there is no real green room. That's only virtual.
Oh, come on, you're giving it away.
Second of all, there's no silk pajamas. I did not get any.
This guy, who is this guy?
And thirdly, I got one beer. Now, granted, it's
the
a good beer.
I thought when I, you know, in modern day trailer, modern day trailer editing, mm-hmm. I figured the best way to get the most views is make it as confusing as you need it to make it. And then your audience will watch it over and over.
Yeah.
Make it as disjointed with making no sense. Right. People will watch it over and over. Add hundreds of jump cuts. People will watch it over and over. That's how you do it.
You're right. The jump cuts, man. I mean, whether it's a trailer or a music video, the jump cuts are where it's at. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Oh, I have no clue what's going on. I keep rewinding. I watch. I don't even know what I'm at.
So check it out. So I start watching the beginning of it. And I'm like, okay, this is goofy. But then I love the lead lady. I love her accent. And I recognized her. Forgive me, I don't know her name. How do you pronounce her
Marianne
name?
Marianne.
Yeah, Marianne Jean Baptiste. Oh,
Marianne
Jean or Jean? Yeah. Jean Baptiste, like the artist. Jean Baptiste. Right? Marianne Jean. So I've recognized her. I've seen her in some other films, and I love her vibe. And I gotta say, her accent. I was like, okay, I'm in. You know, as long as she got the cool British accent, I'm in. Okay,
for sure.
So then, about a quarter of the way through, I'm like, address. But then the lady with the Gwendolyn Christie, with the white makeup and the pulled back hair, I was like, she's not a good dress salesperson. Listen to the way she's talking to her. I was like, you don't talk to your customers like that, lady. And then all of a sudden, I was in.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it looks like creepy as all get out, you know? And the only thing, I have one major question. Like, what the heck is with the hand on the last card at the end?
Oh, to me, that is awesome.
I love it.
That is the cherry on top, literally.
I thought it was cool. Yeah.
What is that?
No, I thought it was the Rob Zombie, resistance purpose, you know, the last little bit, you know?
Rob Zombie.
No, it's basically taking a piece of marketing. So there's a legal standard that you have to show that playbill. You have to show the credits of the people that were in there when you're doing a trailer. And when you show, sometimes when you show somebody from a trade, that like if you have a stuntman spot, if you watch a stuntman spot and you see it on TV and it ends up being a part of the marketing campaign, that because there's a stuntman in it and he's in a trade, you have to put that card on at the end that has the credits, all the credits on it. Because once one trade is in there mentioned, then you have to mention all the trades. So there's a legal part to having that title card on there. And to throw something like Mannequin's Burnt Deformed Hand on top of something that is legally required by the MPAA, or, you know, it's like...
Oh, so you know the inside on this one.
Yeah, so it's like you throw something on that, it's like literally slapping the industry in the face with something that they want with this hand, you know? So it obscures so much of the title card. It does so many things. It's something you never see as an audience because there is that legal space, and they're trying to, you know, like when you hit up against lawyers in S&P and they say, well, we have to see the title card for, you know, 3 to 5 seconds or something. You know, they don't expect you to obscure part of it with a mannequin hand.
Did you guys get the idea or the vibe of all the critic cards? Very like, you know, Quentin Tarantino vibe.
Wait, oh, Quentin Tarantino all the way. Yeah. I loved it.
I mean, I had that. Like that vibe going on where like when they would show like the critic, like best movie, whatever thing. And but the way they did it was like, it was a Tarantino movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Very Tarantino-esque. I'm a huge Tarantino fan. And again, as a blatant plug for myself as a composer, it's my dream to work with Quentin. So, you know, anything he does, I'm like a fan of.
Well, you have one movie to go. I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed, baby.
I think he's got one more to go. How many movies are left? Count them. And then, yeah, you just have to make sure you answer the call, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. Why, did he put a definitive number on the amount of films he's going
to
make?
Yeah, he's got like one more to go. I mean, it's like...
And this is his eighth movie.
See, that's so Quentin. Come on, man. That's so Quentin. That is so him, you know?
There's no way he's going to stick to it. I mean, he's going to be... He'll be like Clint Eastwood. He'll just go until he's in his 90s.
I love that, man. Come on. I know you guys remember watching Clint Eastwood flicks with your pops back in the day, you know?
Oh, for
Maybe
sure.
Maybe that's why I don't like Clint Eastwood.
I mean, the man with no name. How can he not? Oh, okay. I got you, Ted. I got you. It's nothing to do with Clint Eastwood. I see how that goes. Yeah, save that for the therapist.
So let me ask you. Yeah, right. Let me ask. Hey, and with only one beer, I am not equipped for that, Ted. Okay, so my dad used to let me watch horror movies when I was young. He used to love watching horror movies, and he would let me watch them with him when I was probably 11, 12, 13. Mm-hmm. So we watched The Exorcist. We watched The Omen. You know, we watched all that. And that was hard.
Oh, wow, yeah. The big ones of the day.
Yeah, that was the hardcore stuff. So there's a part of me that loves the horror flick, you know, genre. But then there's also a part of me that is kind of like, you know, like taunted by it. I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch that. Did you guys get that about this one?
Jimmy's not watching.
Did you get that?
Oh, for sure.
Okay.
All right. I did. No, I'm not a horror guy.
Okay.
You know, okay. I mean, like, if I do horror, it's in my home when I know when it gets too intense, I could just turn it off.
Amen to that. I'm the same way. I'm a big sissy. Like,
I'm not proud.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big sissy, man. How about you, Ted? Do you enjoy that stuff?
I like the dramatic horror. I don't know about this. This is like, to me, this is so the subgenres, the drama horror and then the gore, which is kind of like the slasher movie. And then I'm sure I'm butchering these for true horror fans, but to me this is like a surreal horror. And Suspiria, the way that hits you is that it's that similar thing, and Lynch does it a little bit, but Lynch is more just absurd, so I actually see more of Lynch's stuff. But the only horror movies that I have gone to the theater for are like the Jordan Peele's, like Us and Get Out.
I can't handle it. I'm too big of a sissy. Really? Yeah. Too much of a sissy. Yeah.
Oh, and just so you know, we had John Cantu on the show a couple months ago, and he won last night a Golden Trailer Award for music in a trailer.
Awesome.
Because he had that I Got Five on it, that song in the Us trailer.
So it was from Us then?
Yeah, it's from Us. The my favorite trailer of 2018 won Best Music.
That's why you nice. Said you had to give John Cantu his props tonight. Okay, I got it.
That's right.
So John Cantu, and forgive my ignorance, fellas, he's a composer then, or an editor, or both?
No, he's both. He's an editor by trade, but he actually did some music work, and he has his name, like you said, in the liner notes, in the credits for the soundtrack for Us.
Right.
So he's like, yeah, so he's done both a little bit of the music
Way
stuff.
Way cool.
And definitely some of the trailer editing. So Us won a couple of golden trailers last night. They won with Buddha Jones and then with Inside Job, which is the house that John Cantu works at, which is the four walls set up inside Universal.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. It's fun that, you know, to hear about people who have, you know, won awards and stuff, and they have been on the Trailer Junkies podcast.
Wow.
And all I want to know is, were we mentioned in the thank you
when
getting the award? Like, I want to thank Trailer Junkies podcast, you know? I don't think so.
We were not.
Yeah, right.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
What happened last night with the trailer? Or was it what kind of trailer awards?
So last night there the award show, or maybe it was two nights ago, the award show was the Golden Trailer Awards, and every year the Golden Trailer Awards are put on.
The
two major marketing awards are the Clio's and the Golden Trailer Awards. So
gotcha.
So is that along the lines of, like, I mean, the Golden Trailer Awards, would that be like the Emmys for TV or the Oscars for the movie?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. But, oh, right. Gotcha.
Exactly.
Figured that. Yeah, that's cool.
Everybody gets their due, right?
And our favorite Free Solo also won for best documentary trailer. So we know James Edgington over at Mark Wallen. He did not cut this, but I know that he was talking about his coworkers that were cutting this. So it was fun.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So you guys typically have trailer editors on the show?
Oh, we've had a number of them. Yeah. Guys and gals who have cut trailers, and they've, you know, they talk about their experiences, some freelance, some work for trailer houses or you know, like companies that cut trailers. And they just talk about their experience, kind of like you with music and just kind of how you got to where you are in your life, you know? I mean, that's really what it is.
I love it. I love it. I've listened to a couple of your shows, and I thought they were fantastic. The first time I listened, I was driving to Anaheim to go to what do you call that place that with all the knights and you eat dinner and they put on a show and the queen and the
medieval times.
It was my wife's birthday and she's like, babe, I'm going to Medieval Times. You could take me or you could not go, but I'm going.
Her birthday, she gets to choose.
And I was like, honey, I will take you.
So, and you listened to us on the way and she didn't divorce you?
Yeah. No, thank God. Actually, she found it quite entertaining as well. So, yeah, that was the first time I listened. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. And you know, hey, when you're stuck in that awful traffic headed to the, you know, the Inland Empire or wherever, it's like, oh my gosh. So,
that's a great time to hear Jimmy and Ted just laughing at each other hysterically.
That's right. Well, I also love the uniqueness of what you guys are doing with the beer and the trailers. I think it's really cool, man. Yes. It's clever. So getting back to In Fabric, you know, I do have a couple questions.
Okay.
I'm on IMDb right now, just skimming around, and I already did some research. So number one, call me, you know, understudied here, but I wasn't hip to Dario Argento's Suspiria. And I just started looking it up, and my gosh, it looks really cool. So I'm definitely going to have to watch that. I will say, Jim, maybe we should watch it together so we can hold each other's hands.
You know, the big thing with me is, like, the mind F kind of movies.
Yeah.
Those I'm okay with. It's just the slasher movies where they have, like, the jump scares constantly. Like,
okay.
I can't handle those.
Okay, okay.
But if you build up, like, you know, a horror, maybe to the extent of, like, I don't want to say The Sixth Sense was horror.
Yeah, what do you call that, Ted? What genre of horror is that?
Like suspense? Yeah, that's like suspense horror.
Suspense, maybe. Like, I can handle, like, deep suspense,
yeah,
you know? But, like, someone chasing somebody with a chainsaw, like, slashing, you know, like an old Texas chain, like, those old slasher type things, like, I don't like because I still have to go to bed at night, you know?
I'm the same way, yeah.
But, like, the ones that make me think for days where I'm just like, what was that about, you know? And, like, I really have to, like, digest it.
Right.
You know, like mentally, emotionally, psychologically digest it. Those are the types of horror that I enjoy. Because, you know, you just want to think, like, what the hell were they talking about?
Oh, that's why you guys have got to see Us. Us is not a slasher movie. There is some blood. There is some death. There is some creepiness. A lot of creepiness. But the analogy that it stands for is so personal that every single person can find something. Because, you know, it's about a mirror maze. It's about a person seeing themselves. You know, I don't want to give too much away if you guys are actually going to watch it. But because it's about a person seeing themselves.
For sure, yeah.
You, as the audience member, can see yourself in the characters and you kind of pick, you know, it's a family. So you can pick the father if you kind of identify with the father. You could pick the mother. So, yeah, so this is so identifiable, it's so unique that your experience in life that you bring to the film has an impact on how you receive the messages that it's sending.
No, for sure. That's the stuff I'm talking about.
Wow, that's deep.
In other words, a Texas Chainsaw Massacre I'm not really into.
Right. Because that's just, all that's doing is triggering your fight, flight or fight, right? Their flight or fight. It's got, it's a one switch. It's a light switch. It's on or off.
Exactly. Yeah.
But when right. you have things like Get Out and Us or the Suspiria, The Shining, then it's like you empathize with the character that's doing horrible, horrible things. And then you don't know.
Like, you know what it's like to be like isolated in a sense. In The Shining, for example, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. The Shining. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's just for him, it just so happens to be a winter resort that they just closed down.
Isn't that a trip? Yeah.
Yeah, but you've been there in other ways, and you can empathize with them. And that's what I'm talking about, where, like, it takes you a little while to digest the message, and you're like, ooh, wow, that was creepy. You know,
or even the horror of writer's block. If you're a writer or a musician or something, you're trying to, you're tasked to write something, you're tasked to do a creative process. And if you're forced to do it, maybe there's something that breaks inside of you when that is forced upon you and you have the solitude on top of it, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure.
That's interesting. Yeah, 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 yeah. That's interesting. All right, so hold on a minute. Getting back to In Fabric. Let's stay focused, guys. This is your show.
Like how he keeps
this is your show,
now.
Damn it.
Like, no man's not even a part of it. He's a part of it, but not a part of it. But, like, he's keeping us
You're talking
track.
About I five other it. Movies. Yeah. My military background, my non-military background, military background. Anyway, all right.
Yes.
My question. One of my questions was, what's up with the washing machine? So apparently she washes the dress. First of all, fellas, you don't wash a fancy dress. You get it dry cleaned. Okay, but this is one of those Hollywood things where you say, oh, well, it's Hollywood, so you just let them get away with it, you know?
Yeah.
All right, okay, so number one. But number two, so apparently she washes the dress and the dress literally just obliterates the washing machine from the inside out. Is that what's going on here?
Yeah.
I guess so, but you can't. I mean, I don't think that was in warranty.
I don't think so. And then my next question is, how do you get a machine like a washing machine to literally self-terminate like that so violently? That's kind of cool. Imagine if you're the props guy, right? Designing that, right? That's got to be fun.
The prop guy had some fun. Yeah, he had some fun. Like, you got to blow off the doors and you got to blow off the panels.
Yeah, you take out all the screws, you put it back together and hit go, and then just let it watch it like explode. You know?
Wow. I wonder if they did that. I wonder if they did that.
Jim, I'm saying I'm not being facetious here. That's actually pretty brilliant. I never thought of that.
And then my guess is you probably film it at like a certain speed, and then you, like, because it falls apart so slowly, you just speed up the speed a little bit.
Oh, maybe you tape a brick or two to the inside barrel so it does a little off kilter spin.
Oh yeah, yeah. There you go. There you go. And then the drum is like throwing the brick around.
Moving the thing all around.
But
it's so funny. You brought up the dry cleaning, right? So mostly you dry clean a dress because washing it would destroy the dress, right? So you want to like save the value that you put into the dress, you know, like you bought this dress. You want to be careful with it. So she
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
She just goes in the washing machine, and instead of getting destroyed by the washing machine, it destroys the washing machine. So it's like,
oh, I see the irony there. Okay. So, I get it now.
So She's the one who's wearing the dress, but the dress is actually wearing her, you know? It's like she's going to be subjected to the miscare, the mishandling of her garments, you know?
So, Ted, can I say this is nothing like Anne's Captain America dress?
Yes, because Anne's Captain America's dress is black and white, and this is a completely red dress.
Oh, okay.
And this dress has never attacked us, nor burned her skin, nor destroyed a washing machine. Knock on wood, because our washing machine is very old.
That's hilarious.
So, Nomad, I think we might have to have you on again, man, because you have like a ton to say about a lot of stuff.
I'm stoked. I can't wait.
Yes.
And I feel like we barely scraped the icing. You know, I mean, we got into a little bit about like the music, a little bit about the movies.
And I have a really good Elfman story. I'll save it for the next time. So I did do the session with him, and I went to his studio right here in L.A. And
okay.
Boy, it's...
Oh, my God. Did you see the Shrunken Heads?
Oh, dude. Shrunken Heads. I saw... everything. That studio is insane. He has it's like a shrine. I mean, it's like a museum and a shrine all in one. It's incredible. Incredible. I was speechless, and I think he thought that I was a little bit of a buffoon because I was so taken aback, and I was so vocal. I complimented him and his you know, his decorating skills and whatnot, and his taste, you know. So whatever.
Well, look at you. You got all your guitars backlit behind you, so it's you got some taste.
And we'll have to save that, though, because in the interest of time, we're gonna have to move on to another day. But
yeah,
you know, I mean, like. Yeah, we'll definitely have you back. There's a lot more to cover. And I mean, you've, like, I think just gave us a teaser. I mean, we have teaser trailers. This is an hour and a half teaser podcast.
Oh, and in a couple weeks, Nomad and I are going to be on TIFO. So yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
looking for
very cool.
By the way, Ted, Ted is the catalyst for me guesting on a bunch of other podcasts. He hooked me up with that one. He hooked me up with this one. And by the way, I did another podcast the other day. Oh, gosh, I can't remember the name, but she's so sweet. I'll look it up. And it's funny because she goes, look, you from the outside in, she said this, I thought this was hilarious. She goes, you've had a bedazzled life. I said, you know, tell us what it, you know, what it's like. And I was so taken aback by that comment. I thought that was hilarious. I never heard anybody put it like that. A bedazzled life, right? Isn't that cool?
That's funny. Yeah, it's like you're like magically struck.
Right. So, you know, I was like, listen, you know what? Thank you. That's so awfully kind. And, you know, but no, I have not. I've had plenty of hardships and trials. Sweetest lady, her name is Lillian Taylor, and she is an attorney, an entertainment attorney down in Miami. And I did a music conference down there a couple weeks ago, and the podcast is called Get Up and Shine Show. It's the Get Up and Shine Show, and you know, she talks about, you know, maintaining that positive energy while you go through life's, you know, trials and tribulations. Anyway, so my point in bringing this up is, number one, thank you, Ted, for being the catalyst of me guesting on a bunch of other shows. I love it. I truly do. Awesome. But number two, more importantly, I don't want any listeners out there to whoever hear me speak to feel like, oh my gosh, this guy is such a jerk because, you know, he's had such a great life and he's so fortunate, he's so lucky. No, because I haven't. And the truth is, look, we all show the best version of ourselves.
Right.
In the media, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, and that's social media to a
that's
key
it.
Right there. You know, I mean, just
that's it.
Find-
we're just highlighting the best parts of our lives. So believe me, I've had plenty of trials and tribulations, and I'm just grateful. And I truly believe that. I think all three of us, I could tell you guys are just like, you know, it's all about gratitude, man.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right, Nomad, hey, we'd love to have you. And real quick, before we get out of here, why don't you just give another quick plug about where people can find you and your podcast, other social media sites, and all that stuff.
Thank you so much. The podcast is the Career Musician Podcast by Nomad. It's available everywhere that podcasts are. Thanks to Ted. He tuned me into how to get that aggregator going. And it's nice. Also on social media, Facebook, Instagram. It's just the Career Musician. I don't really do Twitter, just Facebook and Instagram. And then my personal social media is Nomad's Place. And that's, again, Instagram and Facebook.
And I love what you do on Instagram. Your Instagram is definitely inspiring. You have a lot of different segments that you run in a very consistent basis, which is something that is key for anyone that's trying to work in the social media space, you know, to have something that's consistent that people can come back to and, you know, and know on a certain, you know, semi-regular or regular basis that they're going to have the 60-second, you know, lessons and the all these different factors and different kind of mini episodes of things. So that's great.
Thank you. I really appreciate that affirmation. I try so hard to market myself well with social media. It's difficult, but you know, we stare adversity in the face every day. And then my wife and I have a band called Nomad and Lola, and we have some really cool music. We just released an EP called Noir, and it has three classic song covers. Besame Mucho, the classic Spanish ballad. Bang Bang, the old Nancy Sinatra hit, and another one called Simalao, which is an older Afro-Cuban song that was featured in an episode of I Love Lucy. Noir, the EP by Nomad and Lola, again, just Nomad and Lola on Facebook and Instagram. It is available everywhere. Please stream it. I think you'll dig it, man. We call it music for adults. Get a nice glass of wine, chill back, you know.
And if we're in LA area in Burbank, you guys do some live stuff at some wineries and here and there. So definitely check out the website for that.
Absolutely.
Too.
Nomad and Lola. Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. You guys rock.
Yeah. Thanks, man, for being on the show. We appreciate it.
I want to come over to your living rooms and just chill and have a couple more beers.
I know that's how it feels, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, man. We'll catch you.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks, fellas. Good night.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the Holy Trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.